Welcome to A Conversation with History. I'm Harry Kreisler of the Institute of International Studies. Our guest today is Zohar Zai Alfarov, who is Vice President of the USSR Russian Academy of Sciences and President of its St. Petersburg Scientific Center. He won the 2000 Nobel Prize in Physics. Professor Alfarov, welcome to Berkeley. Where were you born?
Thank you. I have been born in Belarusia, in Vitebsk. It's second city in Belarusia after the capital, Minsk. And Vitebsk is very famous because there was born, grow up, and working Mark Chagall.
Aha!
Yeah.
Oh, gee!
Yeah. And also, a friend of mine about whom I told to you today that I got the very bad news that he died, academician Zakharchenia, and we sometimes joking that Vitebsk is the place of the birth, very good people in many different areas.
Very talented.
Yeah.
Looking back, how do you think your parents shaped your thinking about the world?
My parents shaped me about the world. Now, you see, I have very nice parents, and my mother played very important role in my life, and my father also. They both were born in Belarus, grow up there in sufficiently poor families, but they both were noticed by local teacher who proposed them to go to some relatively high-level school compared to very low-level, so they got, according to their
position
of their family, they got good education.
Mm-hmm.
But they were from very poor family, and my father in 1912 left the Belarus for Petersburg just in order to get job there. Then he was participated in World War I. In 1917 he became member of the Communist Party when it was very small. Then he participated in Civil War. Then he graduated after that from Industrial Academy. He got high education, became engineer, and we were traveled around the country because before the war there was the custom that you must come to the factory to do something in order to factory must be better, and then if you are a good worker, they send to another place. In our family we have only two children, me and my older brother. The name of my older brother was Marx, in honor of Karl Marx. And my name, in order to right pronounce it, is Jaurès.
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 I see.
It's in honor of Jean Jaurès, the founder of the French Socialist Party and Humanitarian newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
My old brother, he had very strong influence on me. He graduated from the school in June 1941 and then volunteered at the age of 17, volunteered to go to Red Army and fighting against the fascists at the front in the most heavy battles in Stalingrad, in Kursk battle, and he was killed in the battle in the beginning of 1944 in Ukraine, near to Korsun-Shevchenkovsky. I visited this place frequently, and among my different kind of titles and so on, I am very proud that I am honorary citizen of the village Hilki, which were freed by my brother, and he was buried in the cemetery there.
What led you into science? Was it the influence of both your father and your brother?
No, you see, my father, he was considered the physics and especially electronics not as very important one, and he always told me when I decided to go to study to Leningrad, to the Faculty of Electronics in the Electrotechnical Institute, he told me, I understand if, for instance, you would be some energy engineer in electric power station, but electrons, who saw it? My school teacher in physics, Yakov Borisovich Meltzer-Zohn, in Minsk, I graduated from the high school in Minsk because just after the war, my father was appointed in Minsk, capital of the Belarusia, with responsibility for paper industry in Belarusia. And there was brilliant physics teacher, I think for young boy and girls, the influence of the teacher is great. Mm-hmm. It was just after the war, so we did not have any physics laboratory at the school, and he just delivered like lectures. But it was so exciting, and I was very excited by his lecture about radars and cassette oscilloscope. Mm-hmm. So, and when I graduated from the school, I graduated from the school with gold medal, so I have the right to get without exams. He advised me to go to study to Leningrad, to Electrotechnical Institute, to Electronics Department. Mm-hmm. So,
before we talk about the work you wound up doing, let's talk a little about science. What do you think it takes to do science well? Is it a matter of temperament? It obviously is a matter of training, but temperament also?
No, you see, there is, of course, there is plenty of reasons really existed. If you are speaking about Russia, just after the World War II, the physics became very popular. Mm-hmm. Because it was a time when we started our atomic project, and to get to study in physics, electronic departments, there were great competition and so on. But interest to science, I think, it depends on, of course, on temperament, on ability, and what I said before, it also very strong influence of teacher, mm-hmm. family. So it's frequently happened that in scientific family, the sons became scientists too. But in my opinion, there is strong influence situation in the school. The school in general, very important one. And in Russia, in my opinion, there was long, good traditions in school teaching.
Mm-hmm. And do in the teaching, what obviously you have to learn math, you have to learn what science has achieved thus far. But does a great teacher help you identify the problems that you're going to work on?
You see, I am in principle very emotional guy. Mm-hmm. And the interest to electronics, I was just emotionally excited by the lectures of my teacher about the problem, electron beams and so on, and how to interact. But later, of course, later it became again very important how you study at the university. I got very good. I participated in scientific conference in the institute at the second year of my study. And one of the associated professors in our institute, Natalia Nikolaevna Sozina, noticed me and invited me to work in the laboratory. So I started to work in the laboratory at the third year of my study at the institute. And she was carried out research in semiconductor physics devices, physics and devices. And that time, semiconductor physics and technology, it was just very seldom you find out these kind of things at the universities, at the research laboratories. So I was also very, it was a happy case that I have had very good teacher at school and very nice. She was sufficiently young and very kind. And there was just, I could not say that she was or she became very outstanding scientist, but she has some peculiar things in your character which attract young researchers. Mm-hmm. And she always help, and we just work together. But when I graduated from the Electrotechnical Institute, she liked that I would be stay at the institute and work together with her. But I became to know even much earlier about the Yoffe Institute, mm-hmm. as the best research institute in physics, and especially in semiconductor physics in our country. So I said, no, I like to go to the Yoffe Institute. And fortunately, I was accepted at the Yoffe Institute in the January of 1953. So I am working there from that time. Hmm. I did not change my place of the work during
same
all my
address.
Life.
So it sounds like inspiration is important.
Definitely.
Hard work is important.
In my opinion in general, independent from your abilities, maybe you are genius or mm-hmm. just a first class guy, but you can achieve real important results where, only where, other things do not exist for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just so deep involved in the research that you forget about other things. And for instance, I live in Leningrad that time. It was Leningrad, sufficiently far from the institute. I was bachelor, my parents were in Belarus, and I live sufficiently far from the institute. I decided why I must spend 1.5 hours by tram to go to the institute. I brought to the institute blanket, some other things, mm-hmm. and was sleeping there, and start to wake up and mm-hmm. start to work.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it happened funny things, because sometimes I was wake up by technician who came a little bit later. Mm-hmm. And that time we have had at the institute very strong discipline. We must put special things on the desk that you came to work on time.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the institute. I never left. But
see.
I was wake up later, and then I must write explanation why I was late to the job, to work to the institute. So then I guess, okay, I can do it in the late evening.
Mm-hmm.
So when I told to other my coworkers in the laboratory, they asked, do it for us too. So our laboratory became the most disciplined laboratory in the institute.
That's very good. So what you're saying is it's once you get a hold of a problem, you give everything to it in terms of time, energy, and
yes,
in your mind.
Yes, definitely. I think, in my opinion, it's just impossible. Because, look, if you just look to the history of science and physics, the most important results have been achieved in sufficiently young age. For theoreticians, it's just the age between 25 and 30.
Mm-hmm.
For experimentalists, a little bit later, because you need some experience to do experiment and so on. But it's also between 30 and 40, between 30 and 35. The most important discovery which I did at the age of 33, 34, 36, like that. But you can do that only when, in my opinion, other things do not exist for you. You must be so involved, because the real science and real scientific discovery, it's hard job, hard work, and to go to the new things, to the new, really principally new things, it's not very simple, because practically, the real new things at the beginning, many your coworkers do not believe that it would be possible. Mm-hmm. Then later it became trivial. When I started my research on the semiconductor heterostructures with the goal of creation of new type of lasers and just with the new properties, absolutely, many people do not believe me. Mm-hmm. And I have not any kind of support inside because, but Yoffe Institute is a special place. So, for instance, my chief of the laboratory, he looks at, heterostructures, it's nothing.
This was your boss then?
My boss. But deputy director of the institute, Professor Gaev, he helped me a lot. When it appears some kind of new amount of money, he helped me to buy new equipment some. Or, for instance, I needed to have more space. He giving to me one room more like that. And I asked him, why? Why are you doing that? A little bit later, when it was really successful work in heterostructures. And he gave me answer. He said, you know, Jarez, I understand nothing in your heterostructures, but I know what you did before. Mm-hmm. And from this point of view, I understand if you so deeply involved in that, it must be good.
So he was a gambler. He was willing to gamble on you.
No, he was a person who spent whole his life at the Yoffe Institute. He was friend of many outstanding scientists. He was in very good friendship with Academician Alexandrov, who was president of our Academy of Science, with Academician Konstantinov, who was director of our institute. So he knew well, he was a real scientist, and he knew well that he can understand the abilities of the people.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds, as you describe this, that what is also involved in being a great scientist is courage. Because you were going places where other people have pointed in the direction, but no one has quite gone there before.
Yes, definitely, definitely. But also, I was in very good atmosphere. For instance, it was very important in my scientific career that I deliver the talk at the International Luminescence Conference in 1969 in Delaware State, in Newark, Delaware, here. It was my first trip to the United States. And there were planning some delegation for this conference. I was included in this delegation. I was sufficiently young at that time. But then, due to shortage of money in the Academy of Science, they decided to use the not to send delegation for the expenses of the academy, but what we call scientific tourism. Mm-hmm. So you are just pay yourself for transportation, for some staying here. And it was sufficiently cheap, nevertheless, scientific tourism. It costed 2 weeks trip to U.S., participation in the conference, and visit a few other scientific places, 700 rubles. That time, $1,000, like
Ooh.
That. Yeah.
Good deal.
But my salary was 400 rubles per month, and for me it was too big amount. I decided it would be impossible. I have family, so I just recently before that married. And our former director, Academician Konstantinov, who was vice president of the academy that time, and he was just in the hospital because he had heart problem. He came for a couple days to the institute and invited me. Invited me and told me, Jarez, your research in heterostructures, very good. It's excellent. And international community must know about that. Hmm. So do not refuse to go to U.S. I would be looking to find out some money in order to pay, for instance, for the flight. But do it. Mm-hmm. Yes, I said okay. Mm-hmm. And it was really very important because after my talk at the conference, I was invited by Bell, by IBM. It was the talk where it was must a lot of results for which I got later Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm. You're actually describing three phenomena that are important, and I want to go over them. One you're suggesting is that there was a kind of institutional support by the Soviet government for science at that time. Obviously, this was the period of the Cold War. But you're also saying there was a fellowship within Soviet science among scientists, guiding students to where they might go, but also supporting them. But thirdly, you're now saying that there was interaction internationally, that
yes.
you benefited
yes.
from those exchanges. Talk a little about those things, because they really came together very well in the former Soviet Union, didn't they?
Yes. I should like to say that, in general, I should like to add something that I was a very happy person because I came to work to the Yoffe Institute.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the maybe the most important condition that you must work in good research place. I think, for instance, at Bell Telephone in the United States, it was very good research center, and mm-hmm. plenty Nobel Prizes were winning by researchers from Bell. The same in Soviet Union. Practically all Nobel Prizes in physics, the winners of these Nobel Prizes were people from Lebedev Institute in Moscow and Yoffe Institute in Leningrad.
Mm.
So it was special atmosphere there. But of course, about international cooperation, I should like to say that very simple thing which everyone knows, science is international by definition.
Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, it's also very interesting that in our country, in Russia, the international scientific tradition exists very long time,
mm-hmm.
and maybe by special reasons. Peter the Great was founder of our academy, and academy was founded in 1724. It's one of the oldest academies in Europe. And because it was some kind of condition in the country, Peter the Great decided to have academy as a society of eminent scientists. Academy as research center with their own laboratories. And academy as educational center with university, which belonged to the academy, and gymnasium. And he only founded, and then it was invited at the beginning to work in Russian Academy. Daniel and Nikolai Bernoulli from Switzerland, Leonard Euler, also from there, then historian Miller, botanist Gmelin, at very young age, 20, 24, mm-hmm. 25, they became famous later in Russia. But from the beginning, Russian Academy of Science became international known with international ties, with international cooperation. And it was practically tradition of the Russian Academy during the whole time, with some intermission, of course. There was some intermission just after the war, when it started nuclear weapon project in our country, and government will take very carefully look how to keep the secrets.
Mm-hmm.
But for instance, immediately when the project was finished, we started again, and our institute was very well known before the war.
Mm-hmm.
And practically Albert Einstein, Niels Bohr, Paul Dirac, Werner Heisenberg, Joliot Curie, all they visited our institute, and they display, and also our young scientists know them, and academician Yoffe, who was genius in not just as a scientist, he was very good, but he was genius as to organize science mm-hmm. in Soviet conditions especially. And he was a person who understood very well from the beginning importance of the unity of science and education. He founded our institute in 1918 during the Civil War. Next year, he founded Physico-Mechanical Department of the Polytechnical Institute, which was maybe one of the first, maybe even first, faculty where it was combination of basic fundamental education in physics and mathematics and together with engineering problem. He understood from the beginning of 20th century that physics is the foundation for new technology.
Mm-hmm. And even to this day, you are as director at the St. Petersburg Center are still building these contact with
Definitely.
The technical schools, with the gymnasium, so that the so that your DNA will reproduce as a science.
It was called Peter the Great Triad.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we restored in our institute, at the Yoffe Institute, this triad. So when I became director of the institute in 1987, the same year we founded special high school, physico-technical high school at the institute, last 4 years of the school. It's only one school in Russia which belong not to the Ministry of Education, but to the Academy of Science.
Mm-hmm.
So we select young boys and girls at the age of 13, and approximately, we do not just require when you graduated from our school, you must go to our department at the technical university. No. Young boy and girls, they like, for instance, after graduation from physico-technical school, they like to study literature, okay. Yeah, but practically 50% of the boy and girls who graduated, they go to our physico-technical department. And then many of them, after that, go to work to the institute. Even in this very hard time, when the prestige of science declined.
In Russia.
In Russia, when the salary is very small. Nevertheless, what I am usually saying, we infected them by science at the young age. And what is also important, I am proud that I have this school. And what is also important, I am very proud of that, that some of our school students go to the university, graduated, and return as a teacher to our school.
Mm-hmm.
As a teacher of different subjects, not only physics, English, history. But they were going to the study in order to return to our school, to be again in this atmosphere. And another very important thing, that it was a long time idea, but realization became possible only at the end of 90s, that we have special building, which we call Educational Scientific Center, or Scientific Educational Center, where under the same roof, school students, students of our faculty, and some laboratories.
Mm-hmm.
It means I came to know, because I spent a lot of time as professor of some chairs which were organized by me long time ago, and I came to understand that the main authority for boy, girl at the school, not professor, not academician, the main authority, just the boy and girl who couple years older, graduated from that. And when he graduated from our school, came to be student of our faculty, they met and interact practically every day, so they start to understand how interesting to be there.
Mm.
So when they finish the school, they go again to our faculty.
Mm-hmm.
When they finish the faculty, they go to work at the research staff of the Yoffe Institute, if we would take them.
So there's a real passing of knowledge and a sense of the spirit of science.
Yes. And there is just some kind of spirit exists there. It's for me, because I am old enough, for me right now it's the best hours when I can spend time with, first of all, school students.
I know that you are not a politician, but you are a man who runs a research organization, and I know that to protect science, you are now serving in the Duma to protect and make known to the politicians, the state, what science needs and what it has to do. That has changed over time, right? I mean, in the earlier period during the Cold War, I believe I read that you were working on designs that were, for example, useful in the submarines, basically. So there was an understanding of the role that science can play for the state and still be science. Has that changed a lot now with the fall of the Soviet Union?
Definitely. There is a lot of changes. There is, of course, a lot of positive changes too. For instance, for international cooperation, for attend the conferences abroad like that during the 70s and 80s, you need to get permission for that from 14 instances. You must get 14 plus and one minus, it means minus for all. You can get plus from the first 10 instances, 11 say no, so
no
it
go.
Happened in my life also many times, for instance, my first international scientific award was one of the gold medal of the Franklin Institute in here in U.S. in 71. But it was not permitted to me to go to get medal at the special ceremony in Philadelphia. So the medal was sent by post. I got it on the post office and signed the paper that I got 40 grams of gold. Right now, international cooperation, it's no problem in principle. It's problem of money, maybe. But what is very important, we scientists, physicists, and other specialties also, we felt that our country needed us. The science were requested. There were different reasons for that. Of course, military goals also and military industry. But it's also the industry was developed in the Soviet Union.
And in the earlier period.
Yes, yeah. High technology. And high technology economy needed science always. The situation is, you see, from some point of view, in different time, of course, there is some analogy between U.S. and Soviet Union. U.S., Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean, it was long time to travel. So you must develop everything in your country due to this reason. In the Soviet Union, there was iron cord, and you must also, due to this political reason, to develop everything in your country. And in spite of any other things, Soviet government paid always very high attention to the science. And scientific, even the most important thing, we are working and felt always that it was important for our country, important for our society, and it was not only just prestige, but we understand that we just a part of development of our country. Right now is a feeling that international scientific community, yes, needed us. Sometimes I am thinking that international scientific community worry about to save Russian science even more or even much more than our bureaucracy and our government. Mm-hmm. And from this, there is not only financial problem. This is just some kind of psychological problem.
Of not seeing the importance of science.
Pardon?
Of not, there's a psychological problem which leads the Russian leadership, political leadership, not to see the importance of science.
They always think about importance, but practically, the economy do not need it right now. Scientific technological success, mm-hmm. because the high-tech industry practically in very heavy situation. So by slogan, you have been listened always. It's important, we have some conception and so on. In practice, no. Mm-hmm. And what is even more important right now, that they consider, they are going to do, to divide basic and applied research in the academy, and not to pay from the state budget for applied research at all. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's full stupidity because, okay, there is some level of applied research when it became just the production. But in principle, one came from another one. Mm-hmm. There exists science and application of science. And it's always applied research needed state support too, and budget support too, because the companies start to pay a little bit later when they look just for profit right now. But it's the main investor always in the United States. It's independent from the system, capitalistic, socialistic, the main investor for scientific development is state. Mm-hmm. Because state can wait more than just company.
Mm-hmm. And you believe strongly, and I've heard you say this, and I've read things that you've written, that this interaction between the theory and the work in the lab is absolutely essential to do science.
Of course.
Because they both sides learn from the other.
Yes, of course, of course. And I also was always saying that why I am so happy to work at the UFO Institute, because sometimes you need to speak with theoretician, to discuss something, to get some new knowledge. You don't need to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. You just came to the corridor, sit down like you and me, and start to discuss the problem. And of course, what is always the spirit of our main institution, UFO Institute, Lebedev Institute, Semyonov Institute, it's very big openness. We never hiding something from our colleagues. We just discuss that. Mm-hmm. And it very seldom appears some problems of priority, because usually it was the atmosphere when people knows who proposed the first. Mm-hmm. Because for scientists it's very, very important. The priority for us in majority cases much more important than money.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the major work that you've won. You've won the Lenin Prize, a whole raft of awards, including the Nobel. And your work built on what had become before in international science. There was the transistor, then the laser maser, then the semiconductor, and then your discovery, the new world that you opened up came from the heterostructure, the semiconductor heterostructure. Talk a little about that, how you learned from what had happened from the past and what was new about what you discovered.
You see, I think it was very important in my case that I first time came to the UFO Institute when we are working in the laboratory for transistors. Mm-hmm. Research in transistors, development of transistors, because the discovery of transistors in semiconductor physics, it's not only technical one. It just new physics came. John Bardeen geniusly guessed that there is injection of non-equilibrium carriers. And I carried out this kind of research a lot and just started to understand that in some cases it would be very useful to use the potential barriers in order to concentrate carriers in some kind of box. And I am an emotional guy. We got the letter, the preprint for PN junction laser from Robert Hall from Schenectady. He sent this preprint to Professor Nasledov, with whom I was very good scientific relations. He gave to me this preprint, and I became very excited about, and just guess that it's excellent device. It's just new type device and for physics and so on, but it would be work only in liquid nitrogen temperature. So in order to improve the properties, I guess it came the idea double heterostructure to my mind, and we discussed that with theoretician who was working in that time at UFO Institute. Later he immigrated to US, Rudolf Kazarinov. So we just proposed this double heterostructure. And I immediately start to carry out experiments and think more and more. And then I understood that in the case of heterostructures, we just have the tool where you can control electron and light fluxes by different ways which existed before in homostructures. And just in very short time, it came to my mind that it's a lot of new physics and new possibilities for electronics. I told you that today I am in bad mood because I came to know about academician Zakharchenyi, old friend of mine.
Who passed away.
Passed away. And we were friends, and I remember, and he was became writer also a little bit, and he was writing about that. I came to him and told to him, you know, the heterostructure is so important that I shall do, the whole electronics would be based on heterostructures. Mm-hmm. So I was occupied by this idea immediately. I was telling about that everywhere, and many people do not believe in that. It's okay, it's paper patent, but then it became not paper patent. And what is also very interesting, it happened frequently. Many things have been done practically simultaneously, independent and simultaneously, in my laboratory and in different laboratories in the United States. Gallium aluminum arsenide heterostructure we invented and published the paper, and we sent our publication just 1 month earlier than Woodall and Ruprecht from IBM. Mm-hmm. We published new properties of the double heterostructure laser much earlier. But then CW operation, it was achieved practically together with Morton Penish group in Bell Telephone and mine. And what is also very important, I consider that in that Cold War time, it was open competition between us. Mm-hmm. And I visited laboratory Morton Penish. He visited my laboratory in Leningrad. And we told each other practically everything. And much later, in 2000, when I was getting Nobel Prize, and BBC TV carried out round table with new Nobel Prize winner. And my neighbor at this table was James Heckman, economist, who got Nobel Prize. He is from Chicago University. I forgot exactly the question, but I always remember what he said. He said that in second part of the 20th century, the scientific technological progress was determined by competition of the Soviet Union and United States. Mm. And from this point of view, it's a great pity that this competition now over, mm-hmm. finished.
And I, this is interesting, and I want our audience to understand. So from this creative moment, when you saw the possibilities of another structure and the use of different materials, that from that breakthrough came all sorts of the key elements of the information age, from cell phone to CDs.
Definitely. First of all, it came double heterostructure laser, and it was time of the birth of fiber optical communication system. Then it was lasers became the needle in CD. Then it on the base of heterostructure, it had been done not by us, but nevertheless, it was based on our research and our structures. Hemp transistor, who is the main element in cell phones. Then bipolar heterostructure transistors we did first in our laboratory. It was predicted by Herbert Kramer and so on. Then solid heterostructure solar cells, which are the most important in space, and practically in space played the most important role. And then, from the idea of double heterostructure, it's a PM. The first brilliant work have been done at Bell in this direction. It just appears a whole new chapter of physics, low-dimensional electron structure and low-dimensional, two-dimensional electron gas, one-dimensional, and what we are doing last 15 years in our laboratory, quantum dots. So it just, there were contribution, of course. Definitely our group and I was pioneer. But, of course, there were a lot of contribution from other groups. And what is also very important, if at the first stage, many people do not believe in that. Sometimes my graduate students, who was working in my group, told me, you see, no one published work in this direction. It's maybe stupid things, and I was just returned from some conference and told, you see, it was not published yet, but they are working. But, for instance, how it was considered the result in this area, we submitted paper to International Conference in Semiconductor Physics in 1968 in Moscow. And in this paper, it was plenty of new physics results, which became later one of the part of my Nobel Prize winning. It was rejected by program committee because they consider that there is no important news there.
So you really, you we have to add this idea.
Then it was accepted with announcement only title of paper.
I see. So in some ways, it's an interesting mix to be a scientist. You depend on tradition, you build on tradition, but then you're a rebel. You break away and make a leap that is in part a leap of faith, basically, because nobody recognizes it.
Yes, of course. And in physics, the most interesting, of course, time in physics, in general, it was the creation of quantum physics in the beginning of 20th century. But in semiconductor physics and technology, of course, it was opened new chapter after invention of transistor, then invention of lasers. It was so stimulate development that it was stimulated my discovery for heterostructures too. I think in general for this part of condensed matter, for this part of physics in general, the 60s were the best time in general.
Now,
because we came to know a lot from previous research in PN junctions, and we start to understand how we can develop the whole area.
We're living in a very different time, and the competition between our countries doesn't exist anymore. There is a great fear of terrorism and so on. Do you feel that this is going to work against the international competition, but also collaboration that existed in the Cold War? I know you tried to come to Berkeley last year and had trouble getting a visa, didn't you?
No, you see, in my opinion, what is the most important enemies of the science everywhere, in your country, in my country especially, maybe, but in your country too, it's bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
It's bureaucracy. I understand that after 11 September, yes, there is a lot of changes. But you see, I was invited long time ago to visit Berkeley. I promised to do that, but there was no time. And then I decided, okay, I can come in September last year. The general consul of the United States, whom I know very well, he just called to me and explained, you know, it's not under my control, mm-hmm. but you must now to get your fingerprint and just to go for interview to the consulate. It never happened before.
The U.S. consulate in St. Petersburg.
Yes, yeah. I must go there and carry out the interview. And excuse me, always we were given to you visa without that, but now it's necessary. I am not control these people. I said, okay, if it's rules, yeah, we always obey to the rules. We came together with my wife. And there was thus some kind of glass window, through glass we were speaking. Came some woman. Later, consul explained me that he was not under him, it was from maybe from FBI, maybe I don't know from where. Mm. And this woman started to ask me, why I'm going to visit Berkeley, what is the reason, or what, so on. Yeah, I answered, yes. And then she asked me, what it is heterostructure? I explained to her what it is heterostructure. She just left, maybe consulting there, or maybe calling to somewhere, returned and said that I am not giving the answer. I give a little bit different explanation. She left again, returned again, and she told me again that I am not giving the answer. Mm-hmm. I was writing to her some gallium aluminum arsenide, indium gallium arsenide phosphate, explain for what goals and so. She asked, it used in lasers? I says, yes. No, it's sensitive technology. She again left, returned again, and said, you do not give the answer.
I see.
So we spent about 10 minutes in this kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished. I said, excuse me, return my passport. I give you a lot of explanation what it is heterostructure. The last explanation I can say you, the heterostructure is for what I got Nobel Prize. But she had some consultation, returned and said, you writing this formula, but not writing this one. So you mentioned 3-5 heterostructure, not mentioned 2-6. I don't know who told her about that, but she returned with a piece of paper.
I see.
So I don't know. In my opinion, there was this kind of custom in Soviet time when we have had in the Foreign Department of Academy, in embassy, some KGB representatives. And they do the same stupid things, ask stupid questions and so on. And sometimes, that time I remember, there was when we returned from foreign trip, the woman in foreign department of the academy who understand nothing in science requested the report about your trip to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I said, you see, I would not give to you report because you nothing understand in that. No, but it was okay because I was academician, full member of the academy. So, and this, I am not giving the answer. So I left the embassy, the consulate, and said, return our passport. I would not go in this case. I immediately called to Professor Konichan Hasnain and explained her to what happened. I said, no, I would be visit because Berkeley is a special place. And I always fulfill what I promised. But we just changed the schedule to April. And maybe you would be work a little bit in order to do everything with my visa. And it would not be necessary to explain what it is heterostructures. because I did that.
Well, one final question requiring a short answer. Are you hopeful about science both in your country and internationally and what it can still accomplish to change the world?
Yes, I am absolutely still hope. And always I am speaking to young students when I deliver some lectures. And I always saying by follows. The modern science is science by modern way, not exactly very modern one, because maybe in Russian language it's a little bit different sense. And you understand what I like to say. It's young. It's only 300 years. Because the modern science started with Newton, with Euler, with Leibniz. It's the roots of the modern science. And these 300 years of science changed the world absolutely. Everything what we have in our civilization, we were getting from basic research and their applications. And it would be farther and farther, and science always would be the main engine for the development of civilization. For the of course, you can use the results of this engine by different way. You can create energy source, an atomic bomb. You can use in information internet for good and for bad things. If you look to the TV, you can watch very good programs, and you can watch the programs when you just like immediately to turn off. Just remember what Julian Tuwim, the famous Polish poet, said. He said, not about TV, about radio. He said, radio is genius invention because just one move by hand and nothing here.
On that note, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to come to our program and to share with us this extraordinary intellectual odyssey. Thank you very much.
Thank you also for the invitation. And I always very like to be in Berkeley.
Good. Thank you. And we hope you, next time the people giving you a visa will watch this interview and they'll know what heterostructures are. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for joining us for this conversation with history.